Good morning, everyone. It's kind of nice to have quiet, isn't it? We don't give you too long or it gets very quiet, followed by the sound of snoring. I shall try to keep you awake. And good morning to my online crew when I've been sick or when I have not been able to get here on a Sunday morning. I've been able to check in and chat with the online folks, and we're a whole little community out there of folks who, for one reason or another, can't often be in the building. So, hey, my people. I get the great privilege of doing the next installment in this series on the Book of Psalms that we are going through this summer. There are many more psalms than we could do in one short summer, so we get to pick our favorites, and the one that I have chosen, Psalm 71, has long been a favorite of mine. It's a song. Psalms are songs. They often were literally songs sung to their version of guitars and keyboards. And it tells the story about how this songwriter finds answers to a question that we all ask: how do I talk to God about my life when I feel panicked about my future? Or when something happening to me right now feels like a real threat? How do I talk to God when my confidence is draining out my toes and my faith is scraping the bottom of the barrel? It is beautiful poetry, but it also gives us a lot of really practical help that I hope I'll be able to draw out for you this morning. This psalm is one that in the oldest collection that archaeologists have unearthed has nothing under the number of the psalm to indicate who wrote it. It could have been a leader. There are some clues in there that makes it that at least possible. But it could be anybody with access to a harp and a gift for writing poetry or song. It could be a woman. There's every reason to suspect that some of the psalms originated in the songs or prayers of women. So as you read it, it'd be fine to imagine somebody who looks a lot like you singing or saying it. Let's see what our psalmist has to say. And it's a little on the long side, not crazy long, so buckle up. In you, Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, rescue me and deliver me. Turn your ear to me and save me. Be my rock of refuge, to which I can always go. Give the command to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress. Deliver me, my God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of those who are evil and cruel. For you have been my hope, sovereign Lord, my confidence since my youth. From birth I have relied on you. You brought me forth from my mother's womb. I will ever praise you. I have become a sign to many. You are my strong refuge. My mouth is filled with your praise, declaring your splendor all day long. But do not cast me away when I'm old. Do not forsake me when my strength is gone, for my enemies speak against me, and those who wait to kill me conspire together. They say, God has forsaken him, pursue him, and seize him, for no one will rescue him. Do not be far from me, my God. Come quickly, God, to help me. May my accusers perish in shame. May those who want to harm me be covered with scorn and disgrace. But as for me, I will always have hope. I will praise you more and more. My mouth will tell of your righteous deeds, of your saving acts all day long, though I know not how to relate them all. I will come and proclaim your mighty acts, Sovereign Lord. I will proclaim your righteous deeds, yours alone. Since my youth, God, you have taught me, and to this day, I declare your marvelous deeds. Even when I'm old and gray, do not forsake me, God, till I declare your power to the next generation and your mighty acts to all who are to come. Your righteousness, God, reaches to the heavens. You who have done good things. Who is like you, God? Though you have made me see troubles, many and bitter, you will restore my life again. From the depths of the earth, you will again bring me up. You will increase my honor and comfort me once more. I will praise you with the harp for your faithfulness, my God. I will sing praise to you with the lyre, Holy One of Israel. My lips will shout for joy when I sing praise for you. I whom you have delivered. My tongue will tell of your righteous acts all day long, for those who wanted to harm me have been put to shame and confusion. This is the word of the Lord. Yeah. So this psalm goes over the same territory three times, each time a little bit deeper. Did you kind of catch that as we were reading along? There's a cry for help and then a reach back into story to stir up the memories of who God has been. And then an expression of renewed confidence in God's largeness and faithfulness. If you ever feel like you're bothering God because you're repeating yourself when you're praying, this is your biblical free pass. Sometimes we need to keep chewing over the same material if we're going to get down to the real issue, the core of what our need is. So the first pass is verses 1-8, and I'll start with the first four verses. In you, Lord, I've taken refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, rescue me and deliver me. Turn your ear to me and save me. Be my rock of refuge to which I can always go. Give the command to save me, for you're my rock and my fortress. Deliver me, my God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of those who are evil and cruel. Now, we don't have a lot of rocky mountains with caves here in the Midwest, let alone fortresses on top of said mountains. But Israel has lots of hills, mountains, and caves. Our psalmist probably had to hide in a few in times of trouble. Maybe you've had times when you had to hide, or you wished you had a cave. So you know the feeling. So hang on to that picture of a safe hiding place when you hear the psalmist cry out, "Be my rock of refuge to which I can always go. Give the command to save me." There's a real human enemy coming after them. In this case, this is a cry for help. Then, this is our first, so this is what we get out of the first pass that the psalmist does. He starts stirring up his own memories of God moving in his life. Verses 5 and 6. For you have been my hope, Sovereign Lord, my confidence since my youth. From birth I have relied on you. You brought me forth from my mother's womb. I will ever praise you. Every safe birth is a miracle, even under the best of circumstances. There is always some little drama somewhere along the line. Yes? That you are here, more or less in one piece, is your first personal story of how much God has shepherded you. Verse 7 says, I've become a sign to many. You're my strong refuge. Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi translates this verse in his book, Psalms and a Translation for Praying, as, many saw in me a model of your protection. That's how strong it has been. How many stories does this person have about God's strong protection as he was growing up? He is stirring up the memories of his personal history with God to encourage himself in his praying. So he starts with his worry. He leans on his story with God. And that leads to verse 8, where he's able to tell God how splendid and wonderful God is. Oh, now I remember. It's like he's saying, I can count on you because you've been there for me. So you have a story. Stories, plural, lots of them. Do you ever tell them to yourself? Whether you've known Jesus for 6 months or 60 years, you've already accumulated some of your own stories of when he found you, of when he rescued you, of when he healed you or comforted you, of how you felt at your baptism, or the first time you opened the Bible and it felt like God was talking just to you. Times when he's given you some of his power to heal a sick person or bring freedom or stand for justice or comfort someone. It is worth doing, stirring up those stories from your own history. Instead of what we usually do, which is to fix our eyes on all the mistakes we've made or the bad stuff that's happened to us, look back over your life. See if you can spot God's fingerprints. Moments when God broke in, when the Holy Spirit touched you, when Jesus saved you. You could put like a list of the key words that help you remember the stories somewhere on your phone where it pops up regularly or on a post-it on your mirror. When you're talking to God about something happening now, you can look at that list and let it fuel your confidence that the same God that did all that is the one you're talking to right now who has the ability to meet you again. So one of my stories came when I was 18 and I was getting ready to leave for school out of state. I'd chosen a school that was nowhere near where I grew up. It was a school where nobody I knew had made the same choice to go there. And I liked it fine. I liked the choice I'd made fine. But I had just taken my childhood faith on board as my own. I just owned it as an adult. And I didn't know what I was walking into. Was there going to be any support for that faith that felt so new and fresh to me? So the only thing that I did for myself was to send a note off to the chaplain of the on the faculty of this very secular school to say, "Hi, I'm a Christian, and I'm coming to your school, and if you could connect me with anybody who might be a support for that faith, I'd really appreciate it. So when I got there the first day, you know, my parents helped me shovel all my stuff into the dorm room, and we said goodbye and cried. They cried, I cried. And met my roommate for the first time, and she was putting up her Dayglo Peter Max posters, and I was putting up my Dayglo Jesus posters. This is, and we were just, you know, having our first conversations, and there was a knock on the door, and I went over and I opened the door, and there was this skinny guy with hair down to his shoulders and granny glasses standing outside the door, who said, "Hi, which one of you is the Christian?" I have a strong memory of this, as you can tell. And that was a little bit of an awkward start, but that was my first introduction to Steve Nicholson. God had many things in mind out of that first interaction, some of which did not reveal themselves until quite a long time later. But had it not been for that marginally believing chaplain sending a message through campus mail to Steve, and Steve being willing to get out there the very first day of the freshman move-in and come find me, it might have been pretty hard for me to find fellowship on campus, but God just shepherded me. He just shepherded me. He made sure that we connected, and Steve connected me to this larger circle of people who were all finding their way in faith as independent grown-ups for the first time, and on this campus where, you know, all opinions are on offer. Wasn't hostile, but it was definitely, you know, kind of a smorgasbord. And when I look back, I thought, that was God. That was God. He took my little thing that I did and made it much for his glory. Yeah. So that's just one little small story of mine. You all have stories. Lots of them. Lots of them. Stir them up. So you'd think this would be an 8-verse psalm. You know, he's done the whole thing. But no, because this person is human like us. Turns out they have a deeper worry, and it's stated in the next 4 verses. Do not cast me away when I'm old, verse 9. Do not forsake me when my strength is gone, for my enemies speak against me, and those who wait to kill me conspire together, saying, God has forsaken him, pursue him and seize him, for no one will rescue him. Do not be far from me, my God. Come quickly, God, to help me. And then he does his, you know, may my accusers be sent down to shame and flame and whatever else I can think of. Our psalmist is standing at the midpoint in his life at this point and is beginning to feel age a little bit. And they're really worried as it becomes apparent they're not as young as they used to be, and the wolves of their world are starting to circle. And as all of you know, this is not without reason. It's not just politicians and rulers who worry about this. Every business person who has reached the top level of their field fears the day when there's a sudden financial crisis, heads have to roll, and their expensive one looks mighty attractive. Every person who works with their hands knows that when they can't lift or bend or see or keep up with the latest software, whatever it is, you are vulnerable. every person who's tried to volunteer and been told, sorry, we're actually looking for younger people, gets it. So our psalmist, despite having just remembered all the ways that God has been a source of hope and confidence in their life, is not so sure how reliable that will be looking ahead in time. Will you still be there for me? Oh, don't cast me away. Don't leave me behind. Don't stop listening to me. That is a perfectly reasonable prayer in need of a next step. What can bring this panicking person back to hope and trust? The psalmist dives once again into story. Verse 14, as for me, I will always have hope. That word occurs more times in this psalm than in any other. Verse 15, my mouth will tell of your righteous deeds, of your saving acts all day long, though I know not how to relate them all. John Goldengay, an Old Testament scholar, comments about this verse that these are sort of code words for all the family stories of the Jewish people. Starting all the way back with Abram and Sarah, leaving their homeland, called by God to migrate to a country they'd never seen before, to God rescuing their nephew Lot when the city that he was living in got burnt to cinders, to Moses standing up to Pharaoh, to Judge Deborah getting a great battle plan from God to get back the Israelites' land and self-governance. And on and on and on. Oh, says the psalmist to himself, I've seen God do what I'm asking him to do over and over for my people. I come from people, and my people belong to the faithful one who has repeatedly rescued, protected, defended, and brought justice and lifted them up. I remember who I am now. And I remember who you are, God. So this is the second habit of prayer that Psalm 71 teaches us. We can find the confidence that we need to pray by turning our minds to the family stories, the ancestry stories, that give us a longer perspective on who God has always been for us and will be again. So do you recognize this face? There's a photo that, yeah, there you are. Do you guys recognize that face? This is an actor named Danny Trejo. Even if you don't know his name, I suspect you've seen that crooked grin and that kind of time-worn face. He's usually playing a bad guy. But in real life, Danny is the nicest, gentlest man, devoted to his family and faith, humble and soft. But he didn't start that way. His childhood was a real mess. His father threw his mother out of the house when he was less than 5 years old. Then he provided for Danny, but ignored him. He had nice things to say about all the other kids in the neighborhood and all of his cousins, but nothing nice to say to him. The only adult male who was ever kind to him was his uncle who sold drugs. And he got Danny doing that as an 8-year-old. He spent time in San Quentin prison 3 different times. The last time, his parole board told him to give them a reason next time to put him away for good, which shocked him into changing how he was living, got him involved in 12-step programs, and changed who he hung out with. A request from an actor he was sponsoring in AA to be with him on the movie set because he was afraid he was going to relapse brought Danny and that marvelous face in contact with the film industry, and the rest is history. I saw his story in an episode of Finding Your Roots, the genealogy program that Dr. Henry Louis Gates does on PBS. The thing that haunted Danny was that he had absolutely no idea where he came from, except very generally that he was of Mexican ancestry. No stories at all, none. Nothing had been passed down. He had nothing to ground him, nobody to look up to or emulate, nothing that told him how to live a worthwhile life. What Dr. Gates' team was able to find out is that right after Mexico won independence from Spain, an ancestor on his father's side had packed up the whole family and walked across the border into the United States. And nobody fussed. And they established a new life. He started with picking cotton, you know, kind of the easy access job of the time. And then he was able to move to a small but growing town in Texas and open a general store and get it going and get enough put together to build a house. And stability came to that family. And on his mom's side, when Mexico got its independence, they put together their money and they were one of the first Mexican indigenous families to be able to buy land, which they turned into a cattle ranch, and then eventually, generations later, sold to the developers of the resorts around Cabo San Lucas, which some of you may be familiar with. Hearing all that, Danny started crying. "I come from people," he said, over and over. "I can tell my children that they come from people. And those people worked hard and did well, and so can they. I wish I'd known this when I was growing up," he said. "I think it would have changed my life." When stories get lost, we lose more than just a fun tale to tell at a family dinner. When stories get lost, we lose important information we need to stand confidently against the storms of life, and we feel alone. In contrast, when we find the stories that belong to us, trials and tribulations included, they form in us a picture of who we can be, what kind of people we are from, how we can endure, how we can do hard things, how we can press on and come through to the peace on the other side. Does your family have some stories? Can you trace the fingerprints of God's hand at work? Miss Lily's family does. Can you see God's hands at work in the lives of your parents and grandparents and as far back as the family memories go? They might not have told them as God stories, but you can see it. Do you tell those stories to your people, of your people, to yourself? Like Danny Trejo said, they can change your life. But maybe you don't. Maybe your stories are lost, or only the negative ones got passed down. That happens. Well, there's help in this psalm. If we have decided to follow Jesus, then we are grafted into Jesus' family tree. And that means that all the stories in the Bible have become our stories too. We come from people. People chosen, beloved, made for a purpose, made to be a blessing to the world. When we need help in our own talking to God, we can call to mind the family stories of God's faithfulness and claim them for ourselves. And it's legitimate. God has changed your story. Jesus has given you his family to be a part of forever. He's even handed you a book of family stories that you can read anytime you want to, over and over, and keep for as long as you want to. In John 10, 14 to 16, Jesus says, "I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen." He was talking to Jews. "They too will listen, and I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd." And in 1 Peter 2:9, we have this glorious statement: "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." This is who you are. Jesus says so. So you can ask him for help with confidence. You come from people. Ooh. Okay, 5 minutes. Coming around the bend to the end, we get to the third round for our psalmist. "Since my youth, God, you have taught me, and to this day I declare your marvelous deeds. Even when I'm old and gray, do not forsake me, my God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your mighty acts to all who are to come." Every person I know in the third act of life wants to have a purpose, wants to be useful right to the end. We recognize that the number of years we have left is fewer, and that the line ahead of us keeps getting shorter. We are deeply afraid of being put on the shelf and ignored. We humans do not do well when we don't have a reason to live. I know I don't. The cry of the psalmist's heart is that God will keep God's presence with him or her and keep giving the opportunity to fulfill the final calling God has for every one of us, that we be the story keepers and the storytellers. We are meant to be passing on the stories of God's power and the mighty things we have seen God do to the people younger than us in the family of God and in our own families. They need to know that they come from people, people deeply loved and protected, empowered and commissioned. They need to hear the stories that tell them they're part of a long, long line of noble, ordinary people stretching back in history to the beginning, especially in our individualistic cowboy culture in America. God's commissioning us to do something very countercultural, which is to help people see themselves as embedded in generations and generations of people claimed by God as his own, made for a purpose, blessed to be a blessing, and responsible to carry the story and tell the story of God's power and his love. Through troubles, many and bitter, as the psalmist says, but also being lifted up, restored, comforted, and set in a wider place. You younger ones, by the way, there is no time like the present. When I was little, the stories my older cousins told were the best. I remember them to this day. A 7-year-old has a lot to tell a 5-year-old. A 27-year-old has got a whole lot of stories already of what God's done in your life, if you've been paying attention. So I ask, what stories can you tell? Must you tell? How has God been faithful? What wonders have you seen with your own eyes? Has God rescued you? Has he lifted you up? Has he given you hope and a purpose? How will you tell your stories? Over a meal? Making a homemade video? In letters? Bit by bit over time? Or all at once in a little book? Or some version of a TED Talk? Or a storytelling coffee house? How will you make sure the stories get passed on and made available? How can you help the generations coming up behind you know that they come from people? People who belong to a faithful God who can always be counted on. The time is now. Once you've departed for heaven, anything not passed on in some way is not remembered. Remember your story. Stir your story up. Let your story help you find faith in God's faithfulness again and again. And tell your story to stir up faith and hope in those younger in years or younger in following Jesus. Let's stand. We're going to pray for a minute. In between services, somebody gave me, told me a picture that she'd gotten when she was praying before the first service, so before she knew what I was going to pray, and it was say today, and it was a picture of a piggy bank. Remember those? Yep. Ceramic pig with slot in the top. But instead of putting coins in, this person was putting memories in of the things that they were thankful for and the things they'd seen God do, and just kind of piece by piece. But then they forgot that there was a way to open it. They forgot that there was a way to break it open. So all those things just stayed in there, forgotten, until they broke it open. And then they saw this mound of stories, and they realized how many things they'd actually seen God do. So, Father, for the people in this room, I pray that you would break open those piggy banks for them. I pray you would help them to see and remember and recall and relive the things that you have done in their lives, in the lives of their family, that you would fuel their faith, that when they pray to you, they would be able to pray big, confidence-filled prayers because of who they know you to be based on their own experience, their own lived experience. Holy Spirit, will you come and rest on your people? Will you pour out a spirit of intercession, of rich, strong, deep prayer, both for themselves and for the people you've given them to pray for and believe for. And for those who have lost the story, for those who have lost hope and can't find a handhold, Father, will you give them your story? Will you reaffirm to them in their heart that they are adopted, grafted in, and they are from people? May that come, Father. Turn their mourning to dancing. Let them dance now and dance in heaven. In your name, Jesus, amen. Amen.